And let's get a view now from Bruce Williamson, who joins us. He's from Rail Future, a campaign for a better rail network. Bruce, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clive.
Thanks for joining us. So lots to talk about in the railway world. I mean, things have radically changed compared to a year ago. First of all, this news today about cutting £1 billion worth of spending on rail. What do you make of that?
Well, obviously, as a rail campaigner, we're not happy to see cuts in railway investment. Railway investment is good for the whole country. You know, it's good for economic reasons, it's good for environmental reasons. And people, I think, are sick of running on clapped out trains and trains with delays and so on. So I think it's really important that we don't, take our eye off the ball, and we must keep that investment going, because railway is a very long-term game. And, you have to think in the long term. We get the payoff from this investment, whatever it is, many, many years, many, many decades down the line. No pun intended.
So it was going to be £9 billion. It's £1 billion less, but that's still a lot of investment in railway. What sort of things may not happen because of this then? Are we talking about upgrading? Are we talking about big projects? What needs to be done on the railways?
Well, there's a list as long as your arm. You know, as a rail campaigner, there's an awful lot we want doing. I mean, one of the key things is electrification. We have seen some electrification, notably the Great Western Main Line, which is very welcome, but there's further work to be done there. We need to electrify through Bath. We need to get the Midland Main Line done. And to do that economically, what the real problem with the railway, and this goes back decades, it's a perennial problem for the railway, is the feast and famine, and that is not good for the railway. So if you have an electrification team that have a whole body of work that's a constant stream of work, they get good at that job, their job, you can have those economies of scale, and the cost of electrification can come down. Whereas if it's like, well, you can do this bit, but you can't do that bit, then the expertise evaporates and we're back to square one, and we have expensive electrification.
I have heard it argued, though, that one of the reasons why they're making these cuts is because they're actually spending more than ever on the railways anyway, because of what's happened with the pandemic. They're effectively underwriting and funding the whole of the train system. So actually, the government is putting more money into trains.
Well, I think there is some truth in that. There is a big hole in the railway's finances because passenger numbers have gone down drastically because of the coronavirus pandemic, of course. But I think we have to look at that as a short-term thing. And, of course, it's not just railways. There are any number of businesses that have also received bailouts. Indeed, self-employed people. The list as long as your arm of where money is being spent to sort of stop people starving while they can't work during this pandemic. And the government, I think, is doing the right thing in bailing out industry and individuals generally, and has to, the country has to sort of grin and bear it, and then wait for the good times to roll, and then we can start making money again.
Yeah, well, there is a big question there, isn't there? I mean, you say it's just temporary. Do you think rail will recover, because people just are not very much on the trains at the moment? Are they going to get that habit back, do you think?
Yeah, I've no doubt they will. I mean, no one knows for definite exactly how it's gonna pan out. But we have seen trains being remarkably busy, or busier than expected, and some people on some lines struggling with the notion of social distancing because so many people are trying to use the trains at the moment. I'm very confident that rail travel will bounce back once the coronavirus is over. If you look back at the last 20 years, rail passenger numbers have just gone up and up and up, and they've more than doubled. And the underlying reasons for that, I think, aren't going to go away. So I think it's right that we plan long term and expect to see further growth in passenger numbers.
Because there are others who take the view that this is going to be a permanent change, not particularly because they don't want to get on a train, but because many people will continue to work from home. People will be less inclined to travel. People have seen, I don't need to make that journey anymore, and I can do it from home. I can do a Zoom call, whatever it might be, and that's going to impact the way we travel.
Undoubtedly, that's true, and things will never be quite the same again. But, you know, don't forget that, that Zoom and Skype have been around for a long time. They were available before the pandemic started. There's always been this talk of teleconferencing and so on, and the brave new world where no one travels to work. But people still did, and right now people still do. There's any number of jobs where you physically have to be there. And even for the sort of admin-y, office-y, computer-y type jobs, I think there's a social element to work where people, you know, want to meet their colleagues face-to-face and have a bit of a natter. I think human communication works face-to-face, and for some people who have got their little home office in their bedroom, it's quite nice to get away from the screaming kids and go into the office.
So trains are the future still, would you say, in terms of the broader plans for how we travel around the country?
Undoubtedly, yeah. I mean, again, I'll go back to this notion that, you know, for the last 20 years, passenger numbers have doubled. We've also seen the government just very recently recommitting to cutting carbon emissions. Well, the best way to do that is to travel by train. Train is a very, very environmentally friendly form of transport, and the government needs to be encouraging it, not attempting to price people off it.
Do you think they've got it wrong with what's going on at the moment then, where you were, for quite a while, you were discouraged from getting on a train? And I mean, to be honest, I don't fancy much getting on a crowded tube train in the current conditions. So do you think the government should have been encouraging us to get on trains more?
No, I think they broadly speaking did the right thing. It's a very difficult one, isn't it? Especially for us as rail campaigners or anyone who works in the industry to say don't use the railways. But we can't ignore the reality of COVID-19. And there is a health risk with packing people into crowded trains. And so I think, again, you know, as a temporary measure, even though it seems like it's going on for an ever and ever at the moment, as a temporary measure, I think it's right to say, now, hang on, don't travel unless you absolutely have to. Wait for this thing to blow over, and then we can get on, you know, with using the trains again. But this actually, you know, highlights another point about investment. Many, many lines, even, you know, even in recent times during the coronavirus pandemic, have found crowded carriages because there isn't that capacity on the railway. And you know, before the pandemic, obviously there's any number of lines where overcrowding was a real problem. So that's why we need ongoing sustained investment, so we've got that capacity on the railway, so that, you know, one day when this is all over, everyone can have a seat.
And in terms of what's going on right now with the way we're funding, I mean, I mentioned the government putting a lot more money in. Effectively, it's sort of become nationalised. Well, how is it actually working? And do you see that as the future now? I mean, is the franchise privatisation scheme, is that dead?
Franchising is definitely dead. I think I don't think there's anyone in the industry who believes it's going to make a comeback. Yeah, I think you make a good point there, because I think perhaps a lot of people, the general public, don't realise how things have changed, and the train operating companies are now running on a fixed price contract, because under franchising, that franchising model is sort of dependent on a forecast of a certain number of passengers paying their way, and when that number goes out the window, the franchises would all have collapsed, and so the government had no choice but to go over to a fixed fee management contract, as it were, for the railways. And you know, I think this is the way it will stay. In fact, I'm very confident that's the way it will stay. It's not going to go back to franchising. We'd been advocating that for some time anyway, to go over to some people call it a concession model as well. Because there were one or two examples of where that had been the case, London Overground and Merseyrail, and the evidence seems to be that it works better. So, that model, the end of franchising, that's permanent. And some people might argue that it is a first step towards renationalisation. And I think it is also, you know, a move towards a more centrally controlled integrated railway. Broadly speaking, we welcome it.
And dare I mention HS2, it seems to be in question slightly again, despite the fact that Boris Johnson has kind of gave it the go-ahead at the beginning of the pandemic. It still seems a huge amount of money that dwarfs any other spending on the rail.
Well, not entirely. It dwarfs anything else spent on the rail, but I read recently that, you know, per mile, it's cheaper than a motorway project that's going on at the moment. I think whether or not you think HS2 is a good thing, it's too far gone, you know, politically and practically. Mm-hmm. They spent so much money and works are now happening on the ground. It's all system go. Going back to my point about taking a long-term view, right now we don't need it, but we will in the future if and when passenger numbers continue to rise, because the justification for HS2 is all about capacity, that our railways are absolutely overcrowded with no capacity left to meet future demand. So it's right that we address that somehow, and the most efficient way to do it is to build a new line, and if you're going to build a new line, you might as well make it high speed and so on. So I think it'll happen. It will continue to be controversial. They may pare back on, you know, future aspects of it, like the eastern leg. Maybe that won't happen, although I think it should. And they could stop at Birmingham, but that would be completely pointless, you know. So I think it will go ahead, and the controversy will continue to rumble.
I look forward to the text from our Birmingham listeners. On fare rises, should the fares be going up as they're reported to be doing?
Of course not. No. Rail fares, you know, we have the most expensive railway in Europe. The government, as I said, have supposedly green credentials. And so if that's the case, they should be encouraging people onto trains, not off trains. It's widely reported that this is the first year that they're proposing to put fares up above inflation, but we would argue that they do that every year anyway, because they use the RPI figure of inflation, which is much higher, well, usually higher than the preferred CPI figure. So in terms of affordability, compared to people's incomes, or compared to the price of milk, or certainly to the price of petrol, fares have gone up way ahead of inflation year after year after year. And petrol, fuel duty for motorists, has been frozen for 10 years or more. It's just not fair, and it's just not inconsistent on the part of the government to punish the rail traveller and give the motorist a free pass every year.
Let's just mention Christmas as well. A lot of talk about this and predictions of huge numbers of people travelling by train at Christmas because they're allowed to mix households and so on. And some confusion about engineering works, whether things are extra trains or engineering works cancelled. Grant Shapps is now saying as well that there are some things that are too important. They can't delay the engineering works. They've been planned for years. So is it going to be chaos or not?
It might be slightly chaotic. I mean, it's the story that comes around every year, because people say, well, it's Christmas, we're going home for the holidays, why are you putting engineering works on now? Well, you have to do it sometime. You know, this essential improvement and maintenance work, it's got to be done. And given that we don't run trains on Christmas Day, and often we don't run trains on Boxing Day, then usually the Christmas break is absolutely the best time to do it. If we did it any other time, then it'd be complaints about commuters being disrupted. And, you know, the poor old rail industry can't win. But I believe that there are relatively few engineering works this year. Major works at King's Cross, and I think some works affecting Waterloo. But some have been put on hold. The train operating companies themselves are making certain concessions, like abolishing peak fares to make it more affordable. But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, particularly where you've got Christmas travel in a quite short window, there's going to be immense stress on the network, and we will see crowded trains and people being unable to afford tickets and so on. So it's not going to be the best of times for the railway, but I hope people will make it home for Christmas.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Bruce Williamson there from Rail Future. When was the last time you caught a train then? Do you think...